Today is Friday, December the 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Thank you for joining us, and a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to you all on this Christmas Eve. Coming up in the next half hour, this will be the first Christmas in the White House for President Joe Biden, who came into the office with the message, America is back.
America is back. Diplomacy is back at the center of our foreign policy.
The war in Afghanistan was America's longest, spanning nearly 20 years. Despite years of international support for the country, the war's final weeks saw a Taliban takeover and a chaotic U.S. withdrawal. VOA's Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb looks back. And the World Health Organization warns that the COVID-19 pandemic will not end until the unequal distribution of life-saving vaccines between rich and poor countries ends.
If we are to end the pandemic in the coming year, we must end inequity by ensuring 70% of the population of every country is vaccinated by the middle of next year.
And despite the COVID-19 global pandemic, in 2021, the global entertainment industry had a very busy year. We'll have these stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. This will be President Joe Biden's first Christmas in the White House. He came into the office with a message, America is back, and he promised that diplomacy would replace military power as the main instrument of U.S. foreign policy. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Widakuswara has this recap of the U.S. president's policies abroad in his first year in office.
It's been quite a year in U.S. foreign policy, with the chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan in August widely seen as the biggest failure of President Joe Biden's first year in office. Michael Kugelman is Senior Associate for South Asia at the Wilson Center.
Terrorism has intensified, and the Taliban takeover has led to sanctions that have put Afghanistan in a position where it has an acute humanitarian crisis that could well lead to mass famine. And I think that, this very precipitate, chaotic U.S. withdrawal is seen as linked to those outcomes.
The withdrawal is in line with the administration's goal to decrease military engagement in the Middle East. But challenges remain, including existing tensions between Israelis and Palestinians and the stalled effort to rescue the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or JCPOA, the 2015 Iran nuclear deal with world powers that the Trump administration withdrew from in 2018. Still, following years of America First under former President Donald Trump, Biden's message is that America is back.
We'll stand up for our allies and our friends and oppose attempts by stronger countries to dominate weaker ones, whether through changes to territory by force, economic coercion, technical exploitation, or disinformation. But we're not seeking, say it again, we are not seeking a new Cold War or a world divided into rigid blocks.
But Biden has drawn fault lines, what he calls the struggle between democracies and autocracies. He rallied more than 100 countries at a virtual summit for democracy in December, excluding Chinese President Xi Jinping and Russian President Vladimir Putin, whom he met virtually on separate occasions, reinforcing a key theme in his foreign policy doctrine. Stacey Goddard is a Mildred Lane Kemper Professor of Political Science at Wellesley College.
Global cooperation around complex issues like the environment and pandemics that require cooperation with China, that require cooperation with Russia. But on the other hand, also trying to keep on this theme of the United States will cooperate with democracies. The United States is a democratic nation, and the United States does see an authoritarian challenge as a significant challenge.
China, now a major adversary in military might and geopolitical influence, is Biden's foreign policy priority. But Russia, another rival, is not staying on the sidelines, mobilizing tens of thousands of troops along the Ukrainian border. Andrew Lawson is fellow in the Europe, Russia, and Eurasia program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
Russia is not a solved problem. It's still a major actor that has interests that are divergent with the United States and our European allies. And so it really can't be put in a box. I think what we're seeing here is some behavior from the Russian Federation to remind the United States that is still there. It still has interests that it wants to pursue, and that those interests can't be ignored.
Another unsolved problem is North Korea, where the administration is unwilling to cut a deal unless Kim Jong-un commits to winding down his nuclear weapons program. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News at the White House.
The war in Afghanistan was America's longest, spanning nearly 20 years. The U.S. in 2001 quickly toppled the Taliban government, which had harbored al-Qaeda terrorists responsible for the 9/11 terrorist attacks on America. But despite years of international support for Afghanistan, the war's final weeks saw a Taliban takeover, a chaotic U.S. withdrawal, and a massive terror attack that left nearly 200 people dead, including 13 U.S. service members. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb reports.
America's longest war finished. With al-Qaeda long diminished in Afghanistan, President Joe Biden told the Pentagon it was time to bring troops home. Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby.
The military had, in fact, done what it was sent to do in Afghanistan, which was prevent that place from ever being a safe haven for a terrorist attack or a launching pad for a terrorist attack upon the homeland.
America's military had hoped to leave its Afghan partners with a fighting chance against the Taliban. Instead, the Taliban rolled into Kabul in mid-August, creating panic as U.S. evacuations began at Hamid Karzai International Airport.
There was a lot of chaos. There was a lot of confusion. I mean, the president of Afghanistan himself had just gotten on an airplane and flown out of the country, and nobody saw that one coming.
Afghan forces, trained and equipped by the U.S.-led coalition for 20 years, fell in fewer than 20 days. Some of those forces pointed to a lack of food, ammunition, and air support. Local leaders in areas across the country quickly made deals with the Taliban, forcing others to surrender or flee. Thomas Jocelyn is the editor of the Foundation for Defense of Democracy's Long War Journal.
Despite being at war for 20 years in Afghanistan, nobody really knew anything. They didn't really understand. The U.S. military leadership and political leadership didn't really understand who they were even fighting in Afghanistan, didn't understand the Taliban, didn't understand al-Qaeda, and didn't understand the relationship between those two.
The U.S. helped evacuate 124,000 people in just a few weeks. But that effort was marred by an Islamic State terror attack that killed nearly 200 people, including 13 American service members. Days later, a U.S. drone strike the Pentagon says was meant to hit Islamic State attackers mistakenly killed 10 innocent civilians. The U.N. says Islamic State Khorasan, once limited to small areas in Afghanistan, has now expanded to every province. And the U.N. says their attacks against the Taliban and civilians have increased fivefold this year. Speaking in an interview with Voice of America, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin vowed to use so-called over-the-horizon capabilities to continue to go after any terrorist in Afghanistan who plan to attack the United States.
That's making sure that that we pay attention to the threats as they evolve. And we will remain focused on that with a laser focus.
But the U.S. military now has only about 1-2% of the capabilities it once had to look into Afghanistan, the head of U.S. Central Command told the Associated Press. That makes the counter-terror mission there even more difficult. Carla Babb, VOA News, the Pentagon.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. The World Health Organization warns that the COVID-19 pandemic will not end until the unequal distribution of life-saving vaccines between rich and poor countries ends. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
In an assessment of the year gone by, WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says the world is still in the grips of a pandemic that shows no sign of going away. He notes more than 3.3 million people have lost their lives to COVID-19 in 2021. That, he says, is more deaths than from HIV/AIDS, malaria, and tuberculosis combined. He says the odds of this turning around anytime soon are not good. He says there is consistent evidence the new Omicron variant of the coronavirus is spreading significantly faster than the Delta variant. He says it is likely that people who are vaccinated or have recovered from COVID-19 could be infected or reinfected.
None of us want to be here again in 12 months' time, talking about missed opportunities, continued inequity, or new variants. If we are to end the pandemic in the coming year, we must end inequity by ensuring 70% of the population of every country is vaccinated by the middle of next year.
Statistics show at least half of the world's population has received a COVID-19 shot and the other half has not. People in rich countries have received about 50 times as many vaccine doses as those in the poorer countries. For example, WHO reports just over 10% of people in Africa have received at least one dose of COVID-19 vaccine, compared with 64% in North America and 62% in Europe. Studies show booster shots are effective against the Omicron variant of the virus that causes COVID-19. WHO, however, says boosters should be given to the elderly and people who are immunocompromised and not to those at low risk, such as children. A senior advisor to the Director General, Bruce Aylward, refutes accusations that WHO is against boosters.
What WHO has said very clearly is that we want to make sure that every dose of vaccine used has the best possible impact to get us out of this pandemic. And what we're seeking is equity in the use of vaccines globally. The biggest bang for your buck is vaccinating someone at risk who has not received a dose of the vaccine.
Aylward notes most people who are hospitalized are unvaccinated. He says the goal right now is to make sure everyone gets the first dose before people at low risk get their booster shots. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Voice of America.
And let's go to the Horn of Africa in Ethiopia. What began as a conflict between the Ethiopian federal government and a regional militia in late 2020 exploded into an expanding civil war in 2021 that has forced 2 million people to flee their homes and left hundreds of thousands in famine-like conditions. And then this week, the rebel Tigray People's Liberation Forces said they will leave the Amhara and Afar region and withdraw to Tigray region to foster a negotiated peace end to the war against federal forces. VOA's Heather Murdoch reports on the displacements, ethnic killings and mass rape in the increasingly devastated region.
By the beginning of 2021, the war in the Tigray region of Ethiopia, then more than a month old, had forced tens of thousands of people to flee across the border to Sudan. Refugees reported ethnic massacres, sexual assaults, and mass arrests. In the months that followed, the humanitarian crisis deepened. More than 1 million people were displaced inside Ethiopia, and aid workers warned of looming famine. The few hospitals not damaged or destroyed in the region were packed with war wounded, including children who had been stabbed, shot, or become victims of newly laid landmines. 11-year-old Goitam lost one leg and now suffers from infection and nightmares. Goitam's father, Gabriel Hannes Atakelti, says his son was taking the goats to graze when he stepped on a landmine. Goitam is too weak to speak. The war broke out in the Tigray region in late 2020 between the federal government and local Tigrayan forces. It quickly expanded to include other regional forces allied on both sides and Eritrean forces fighting with the government. Both sides have been accused of massacres, torture, and other atrocities. Federal Ethiopian and Eritrean forces have also been accused of systematic mass rape. Hundreds of women and girls have come forward, and aid workers say many, many more have not.
Our survivors say, they raped by militaries.
Mihira Radai is a caseworker for sexual assault victims in Aydar Referral Hospital in Makala, Tigray's regional capital. She says many women who are raped by soldiers are often afraid to come forward, and many others have no access to health care. A national election in June reestablished the authority of Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, a Nobel Peace Prize winner, who then had control of the Tigray region. About a week later, Tigrayan forces recaptured the region, and the war escalated, now engulfing many areas beyond Tigray. Abiy has vowed to crush his enemies.
Access by independent monitors has been a major challenge. Reportedly, many have been...
On December 17th, the United Nations voted to investigate abuses by both sides of the conflict, including the reported mass detentions of as many as 7,000 people, allegedly sympathetic to Tigrayan interests, among them 9 UN workers. In the battered Tigrayan countryside, many say they have seen so much tragedy, they no longer fear arrest. Haftoum Gidey, a resident of the war-torn town of Housen, says he no longer fears war or arrest. He has seen too much already. Mass graves litter the countryside as massacres continue here and in neighboring regions. Refugees are still fleeing to Sudan, and many areas are cut off from humanitarian aid. Hundreds of thousands of people are living in famine-like conditions, and the UN now says at least 2 million people in 3 Ethiopian states have fled their homes. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Istanbul.
You're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Despite the COVID-19 pandemic, in 2021, the global entertainment industry had a very busy year. It was especially a milestone year in Africa's expansion of its influence on the global culture. From Nollywood breaking into the global streaming space, to Afrobeat artists selling out the biggest entertainment venues in London and New York, it has also been a year in which we lost some iconic cultural figures, from Virgil Abloh to legendary actors like Michael K. Williams and many others. And there's no doubt that the COVID-19 pandemic still controls the dynamics of the global entertainment industry. But has it also presented new opportunities for growth in revenue for the historically under-recognized or underrepresented shapers of global culture? Tuma Bassa is the director of Black Music and Culture at YouTube. He joins me. Tuma, thank you so much for joining us. We know as a result of changing consumer behavior due to the pandemic, we saw a sharp decline in revenues from movies to concerts in 2020. But despite the continuing pandemic in 2021, this was a very busy year. In your opinion, do you believe that the industry has fully rebounded?
No, well, it's back. Remember in 2020, revenues went down because at the beginning of 2020, for streaming, for example, right? The streaming, people were streaming when they were driving to work, when they were at the office, all the establishments, restaurants, playing music, gyms. The first part of the pandemic, all that slowed down. So the audio streaming went down. Video streaming went up. Like people watching videos at home on their phone, iPads, laptop, more, but audio streaming went down for a second, and so revenues went down a little bit, but they came back. The Recording Industry Association of America, right, which tracks revenue in music industry, did a mid-year report, and revenue mid-year, because we haven't finished the year completely, mid-year went up 27%. It was like $7.1 billion in 2021, the first part of 2021, versus $5.6 billion. 84% of that is from streaming. And then then this year was a lot of legacy artists sold their catalogs. Bruce Springsteen, Tina Turner, Bob Dylan, ZZ Top. They sold their cat. Bruce Springsteen sold his for $500 million. So there's also alternative forms of revenue coming in. Concerts. Oh, yeah, concerts are back, right? We went to a few sold out concerts, me and you.
Correct.
So you know exactly firsthand that concerts are back, tours, music festivals are back. So it's when you say fully rebounded, I think there's still an upside, and hopefully Omicron doesn't mess that upside too much. You know, I mean, of course, safety first. Yeah. So
2021 has been a good year. It's still rebounding. It's not yet fully there, but it was much better than 2020. And let me move you to some of the sad news from 2021. We lost quite a number of influential and iconic figures in the industry, you know, from Michael K. Williams, DMX, the legendary Cicely Tyson, but perhaps no death shocked the industry quite like that of Virgil Abloh, a first generation Ghanaian American who was a trailblazing figure in the fashion industry. But far beyond fashion, what would you say is his impact on the entertainment industry? Why was his death quite a shocker?
I mean, his influence, he influenced, was beyond fashion and music. He influenced creatives. He transcended that, actually. And he also achieved so much in his short life with his brands, his own brands, with his own leadership, being like in such a high position at Louis Vuitton.
The first black person to hold that position, yeah, correct?
Very much. You know what I mean? You see what I'm saying? He connected the dots creatively, and that's why Off-White connected. And Off-White had partnerships with Nike and had a ubiquitous presence in the highbrow streetwear fashion. If you looked at people's social media posts, people really looked up to some of his philosophies and what he said, his kindness and the how he maneuvered through the ranks, you know, and it was quiet. It was a shock.
Tuma, let's move on to the continent. 2021 was undoubtedly Wizkid's year. How has he changed the game?
It's more cultural than commercial. The commercial part was there, and especially for African music as an export to America or to the UK or to Canada and places, markets like that. However, it was the cultural penetration where you were hearing his music in clubs, you were seeing his fellow artists in other genres singing along, you were seeing the respect. The breakthrough of Tems on Essence, you know, is that's something that's common in hip hop, where a new artist or young artist is featured on a song and it introduces them to a whole nother audience and it grows. So with Wizkid, is the cultural breakthrough, you know, is made in Lagos. Yeah. We saw two shows here in DC,
right.
and he sold out the O2 Arena three nights in a row. In London, O2, you know, you turn the O2 into the O3, right? Three nights in a row, the live stream on YouTube, you know, it was just incredible. And also the Grammy nominations, we already knew this, but the world is starting to know, and it's blazing a trail.
Let me, before we end our conversation, Tuma, I wanted to ask you again in terms of Wizkid, who would you say on the continent culturally carries the same level of influence on global culture on par with Wizkid?
Yeah, I'll call it the trilogy, the African trilogy, right? Wizkid, Burna, Davido. And the reason I'm saying that they're all very different, you know what I mean? We know their music is different, the personalities are different, the albums are different, everything's different, the energy is different. They're all different. That's the beauty of African culture is you can have one country and have 300 languages. And Africans understand it's not, overseas don't always, they generalize and everything is one thing. Now, with those three kings who dropped albums last year, 2020, Made in Lagos actually came out last year. African Giant came out last year. Better Time came out last year. But the music was still moving and happening and growing this year. Right?
In 2021, yes.
For 2021, all three of them.
I feel like up to 2022, we're still going to be listening.
100%. Yeah. 100%. And so the thing is this, so those three, in terms of the global footprint, have clearly made the biggest impact. Burna did Hollywood Bowl. We've never seen an African artist doing Hollywood Bowl. Burna's doing Madison Square Garden in April, you know? That's a big deal. 2021, females really stepped up in terms of bodies of work. Tems, Ira Starr, you know, Tiwa Savage, they all dropped albums, which is huge.
Tuma Bassa is the director of Black Music and Culture at YouTube. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you all a very Merry Christmas.